Thank you so much for listening to us here on Pritch and Clay, a morning show on Raider Nation Radio. If you're catching us on the Raiders app or at LVSportsNetwork.com or checking us out locally on Raider Nation Radio 920 here in Southern Nevada, thank you for letting us be a part of your Friday morning. Just like Lucky John Kaufman pulling out the Rolling Stone tickets while at work, hanging out, listening to us. You could be that guy, too. We'll continue to keep having great giveaways and tickets throughout the weeks and months ahead here on Raider Nation Radio on the morning show here every day.
I was just thinking about what the rest of the day is going to be like for John.
Yeah,
I mean.
Well, if you were lucky this early in the morning.
Oh.
You got to feel like, hey, man, I don't even know what I'm doing to work. So I'm just happy all day. And then you're walking around lucky and you don't even know it.
Well, no, he knows it now.
He knows it now.
I'm sure everybody around him knows it. But it's just, yeah, to just hand out a pair of tickets to Rolling Stones. And thanks again for listening, John. Awesome. But just think about the rest of the day for him and his family, probably. I mean, that's what this is about, right?
Yeah, John's got a little bit of a problem. Like, who now? Now everyone knows you got the tickets. So who do you bring? Because there's going to be some hardcore talks. If your girlfriend or wife, you know, she's almost like the de facto, you're taking her.
Yeah.
But what if there is somebody that you know that you love, then you know that they love the Rolling Stones, too?
That's like that's like a Raiders game, too, though. I mean, everybody got their season tickets. They're getting them, right? Beautiful display, by the way.
Yes.
And so they probably already decided. But those are the decisions that weren't there last year. Remember? Because the announcement came out, hey, no fans. If one fan can't go, no fans. So even though you got your season tickets and you got the display, you couldn't really go to the game. Now you can. And it's like, man, now you have that decision. Okay, who am I taking? Who are we going with? And you start to plan it, right? And so that just gets so much more exciting about what's going to take place here in a matter of weeks, matter of months, and having the Raiders hosting teams and seeing Allegiant Stadium at capacity.
I think John's boss is wondering, why is Kaufman smiling all day? Why? I have never seen John anymore. He's like got a little hop in his step. He's excited. You know, it's like, John's got to be buying drinks though, at the end of the day, though, over a happy hour.
I don't know what John's going to be doing. He's going to have a great day. We know that.
It's a celebration. Yeah. Back here on Raider Nation Radio. Thank you again for listening. And I want to play this one comment before we move on to Henry Ruggs. Just Derek Carr. He was asked about, is there a chemistry with the wide receivers? Because you have guys that are young and inexperienced. And you also have Willie Snead and John Brown coming in. Talk about that chemistry now with all these new faces and the younger faces from last year that kind of seem to be a little unproven. And Derek had one awesome comment there, and I want you to hear it. Here's DC.
It's been nice because we've had some carryover in the last couple of years, you know, to where, you know, not only is it a new guy and running new routes, you know, when you're adding people like Smoke, right? Not only is he coming in and he's a new guy, I got to learn how he cuts on certain routes. They all cut differently, you know, and they all want to run a route certainly different. But you're teaching them a system, too. Well, we don't have a lot of guys like that. You know, it's really him, Willie, you know, some of the young guys. But, you know, Hunter's played, Zay's played, you know, Brian has played in this offense, Henry's played in this offense. You know, and it helps the relationship part, you know, going forward. You've played games with these guys. So when I'm like, hey, remember such and such play in Denver, you know, hey, third down of the game, I need you to run it like this, you know, more like this, and they have recall of that. Whereas with a whole bunch of new guys, it makes it harder because you don't have that. You know, you're just kind of talking through it, watching it on a TV screen, and then, all right, now I need you to go do it physically. So having only a few of those guys, it helps because you're not having to, you know, kind of teach a guy, hey, can you do it like this? Or I know you did it like that, but I just feel comfortable if you do it like this, you know, and kind of mixing those worlds. And really with these guys, we spend so much time together. You know,
it's Derek Carr. No new guys. That's the point. I wanted to play that cut. There are no new guys anymore. Yeah. We have continuity on those who have been there before, but the guys we have brought in, they know exactly what I'm looking for and what I need and what is expected from them. There are no new guys. Forget about youth. Forget about inexperience. I like how that works out for the wide receiver room because that lets me further know There's a continued continuity, and you can improve upon what you did last year when you have a situation like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, think about the decision-making from the quarterback position. And if anything's cloudy or muddy or just doesn't look right, you're going to get off that decision, and you're going to go to the next one. So as a receiver, I got to know that about my quarterback. I got to know that if I'm primary, even if I'm secondary, even if I'm third in progression, I got to give him a clean look. I got to win. I got to get open. I got to be big target. So just understanding that decision-making from the quarterback, that how much he has on his plate, the timing. Like, is he a five-step drop? Is he a seven-step drop? Is it a hitch? Is he back foot throw it? Is it a play action? What's the thing? All that stuff. As a receiver, you got to know that. It's so much more than just running a route. I mean, you have to have that feel, that timing, that rhythm of the play. And that's what Derek Carr is talking about right there. Everybody's different in how they get there and how they do things, but yet you can't be different. You got to be the same, because when I hit my back foot, if I'm not hitching, I got to throw it. Mm. If I am going to take a hitch, okay, got a little bit more time. Or do I need to drop back quicker because I know he's going to win immediately? Or do I slow it up a little bit? You know, all those nuances. You know, you got 20 practices to get that down, man. And so it comes together quickly. But yet these guys are professional. That's why you get paid the big bucks, Clay.
Yeah. And yeah. For Willie Snead, I did it again, John Brown and Willie Snead, what do they look for in a quarterback like Derek Carr in order for them to, you know, to rely and get a good chemistry? And because they've worked in many with different quarterbacks, mm-hmm. they've worked in West Coast offenses before. How different is maybe like a Derek Carr delivery versus maybe a Drew Brees delivery, and the way they want to like set up these passes? What are these veteran receivers bringing to the table, and how quickly can they just close that and flatten that learning curve?
Oh, it's already flattened. I think the amount of reps that you have and you get that feel, mm-hmm. you understand how quick your quarterback is or how quick the drops are or what he is expecting. I mean, we all have targets. If it's an in route, 12 yards, whatever, basic cross, 10 to 12 yards, or if I get impeded, okay, I'm going to cut that back a little bit. But it's the timing and the rhythm of the offense. And as a veteran receiver, Brown and Snead and all these guys, I mean, they know that. They understand that.
They understand mm-hmm. that. That's why they were brought in.
Yeah, right. Let's hit the ground running, because you have Renfro that already understands that. He has that rhythm and timing and nuance already down with Derek Carr. It's worked. Henry Ruggs and Edwards, the newer guys, in terms of experience anyway, they'll get that. They had a ton of reps in practice last year. Certainly didn't see a lot of it in the games, but we'll see more of it. And you're going to get a ton of reps in training camp too.
When you were with Atlanta, your first year, you had Chris Miller throwing you the ball. And the next year was Bobby Hebert.
No, the next year was Joe Tolliver.
Oh, it was Billy Joe Tolliver. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bobby didn't come till my third year there.
I'm sorry. That's right. I forgot about the Billy Joe era.
Man, we had Wade Wilson era. I mean, we had so many quarterback. we had revolving door quarterback era. How about that?
Yeah. It was that third year when you got Bobby in there. What was the transition for you to go and have a guy like Bobby who's throwing left-handed, right?
No, he's right-handed.
So he's right-handed. Mm-hmm. But what was the delivery, and how long did it take for you guys to transition to be on the same page?
Well, so Bobby's arm strength wasn't there because of the elbow injury. His arm strength was different than Chris Miller or Wade Wilson or Billy Joe Tolliver or anybody. Certainly Brett. But, yeah, you had to adjust to that. You know, you had to adjust to, but our play calling got different too from June Jones. So
okay.
I think for Derek Carr and John Gruden to have this continuity for 4 years now, I mean, his arm strength is great. He drives the ball very, very well. And then he has touch. I mean, the deep routes. I mean, I don't know why Coach Gruden would have the brakes on this offense at any moment, unless you just don't have the confidence. And so as players, as offensive players, especially the skilled position players, that's what we're talking about on the sideline during the break. If the defense is getting their reps, say, look, man, we got to give that guy right over there talking about Coach Gruden all the confidence in the world to light up this offense. That's our job this year. And I would be repeatedly talking about that every single day in some capacity.
John Gruden had two Hall of Famers at his to work with in 2001 when they went to the AFC Championship game, Tim Brown, Jerry Rice. Could this be a more deeper and more explosive wide receiver group than John Gruden's had at any time in his career? Because even the guys in Tampa Bay, they were good, but did they have enough variety in the diversity of this group that this group has right now in 2021 with the youth, the speed, the slot receivers, as well as a guy like Derek Carr that can go big and deep and have a Darren Waller there as well? Could this be his best group of receivers?
You know what? It's an interesting question. I think it's hard to compare that, the years of Coach Gruden and the production. Obviously, you know, when you have two Hall of Famers, you don't compare the beginning of somebody's career to that, right?
It's impossible almost.
But I will say this. We have not seen a Darren Waller in this league. It is incredible to think about the potential that he still has. At 6'6", running a 4.4. It is insane, Clay. It is off the charts. And
there's nothing like it.
There isn't anything like it. We have not seen anything like this. And he's just getting started, to be honest with you. So knowing that, as offensive coaches, I mean, you're driving over the speed limit to get to Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center every day, yeah, right?
Yes.
Like, we got Darren Waller on the tee. We got Darren Waller. What can we come up with today? We got Darren Waller. Okay, what are we doing today? We got Darren Waller. So,
sir, do you know how fast you were going? Yeah, but I got Darren Waller.
I got to design some plays for Darren Waller. You understand that, officer?
Well, stay right there. We'll give you an escort.
Yeah, we'll help you get there in time. No, man, it is. It's like getting a Bo Jackson, man. It's like getting a Marcus. It's like getting a Cliff. It's like getting something that is just different, you know, and the Raiders have it. And this league, if it's used the right way, which they're working towards and they're almost there with it, this league will quickly forget about Kittle. This league will quickly forget about Kelce.
Yes.
Because what Darren Waller can potentially do, we haven't seen before.
And in just a short amount of time, we're already starting to forget about what they are able to do, Kelce and Kittle, because you are seeing the dynamic athleticism of Darren Waller and how nobody can stop him. The only person that can stop him is him. That's the only person. Because they're defensively, there's no answer for what Darren Waller can do. And we'll take a break on this because Henry Ruggs III is in that spot too. HR3 got some great comments of him. And I'll tell you what, you can see a mindset beginning to build on what he thinks and where he should be in 2021 is higher than you might realize. It's Pritch and Clay on your Metal Friday. Back here on R&R 920 AM on Twitter. Go up there, check it out. We have now we retweeted a couple of spots from Vinny Bonsignore and Q Myers. They are live at camp right now, getting some good footage. Up there on now is defensive line work. Unique Ngakoue, a little drill there, and getting the guys set up on the offensive line as well. Some great stuff captured by both Vinny and Q. They'll be both up today between 2 and 4 and 4 to 6 on a full day of Raider Nation Radio. All right, Henry Ruggs III met with the media a couple days ago, and talking about, all right, where are you at now in this offense and on this team? And I think a lot of us want to see, all right, an emergence of maybe a leadership almost, because like you said, a guy who gets called in his name on the draft and he walks across that stage and puts the hat on, that's who you want to be emerging as a leader. Not a prove it year guy who's just on a 1 year contract free agent. It's got to be somebody that, you know, is born and raised as a Raider. Honey Ruggs might be that guy. Now, he's a soft, quick-spoken guy. He's not going to go long on answers. So you might hear an extra question in here because everyone is asking him pretty much the same thing. Where are you at? How are you getting bigger? How are you going to evolve in this offense? And this is Henry Ruggs when asked about where do you assess yourself in 2021 as opposed to last year?
I mean, just come in and play a bigger role. You know, I got to play a vital role. I mean, even with the veterans coming in, you know, Willis Lee and John Brown, I still gotta take leadership, you know, in the room. I feel like I have to lead the way for the guys.
All right, right there, right away. Just saying, right now, I want to take a leadership role in the
room. I want to be the guy. That's what that means.
That's what it means.
I get it. Brown's coming, Snead's coming, but I want to be the guy. That's it right there, Clay. There's nothing else more than that. That's it. I want to be the guy.
I want to be the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, leadership by example, verbally, who knows? certainly by example, because he's got the most ability than anybody else in that receiver room, and he knows it.
God, he does, too.
Yeah, he does.
Yes,
and
he
knows it. I mean, but you have to demonstrate that. You know, it's that whole demonstration or display that allows an alpha to emerge, and people bow down to that. Like, man, I can't run a 4.2. I can't do what that guy does, right?
Yeah, then that sets the tone, doesn't it,
yeah,
for everyone else?
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does. So, but he's got to be that guy. And it sounds like he understands that right there with that answer. He's thinking that way, too. And that's the assertiveness. Remember I said that last year?
That's right.
Henry Ruggs III. I said this during the season. Henry Ruggs III, all he has to do is allow that assertiveness to emerge and get in Carr's ear, get in Gruden's ear, let everybody know that you want to be the guy. And that's the beginning of it right there. When I heard that soundbite right there, to me, that's the beginning of, you know, just the evidence that Henry Ruggs understands that.
This is more from Henry Ruggs III talking about being confident in this offense and what the goals are for this year.
I mean, like I said, just taking on a bigger role and being, you know, being that go-to guy for not only my room, but for the offense and even for the team.
Henry, you finally got a chance to go through a regular offseason in the NFL. How much difference do you feel that was compared to what you had to go through last year?
It's an incredible difference. I mean, the biggest thing is confidence. I mean, and going in with this new group of guys, I mean, we just developing the chemistry, you know, throughout OTAs and minicamp. It's a lot better, and the camaraderie is just there, like unlike last year.
All right, Henry Ruggs III wants to be the go-to guy. That came out of his mouth. Like, mm-hmm. I
want to be the guy.
I love this assertiveness, like right. You said, right?
He's asserted himself.
This is where it needs to be. For him to get better and for the Raiders to get better, that's the kind of assertiveness you need. And maybe that's the stuff that people have been talking about in this offseason of why Henry Ruggs III is different than last year.
Yeah. I mean, some guys, it happens sooner than later. Like, why do we have a Justin Jefferson his rookie year without an offseason?
Why?
Because he was assertive right away. You know, why do you have other rookie players that emerge and do things differently? Like, just Chase Young or just young players that are coming to mind, rookies that are fantastic. Hell, Max Crosby, his rookie year.
Good point.
I mean, it's like sometimes you just got to go out there and take something. Now, if you're slow to understand that, then okay. You know, if you get cracked in Carolina and you're like, what the hell just hit me? Then that can delay it a little bit. And so here you have a guy who's assertive mentally, and then he's beefed up his body. Like, I can withstand anything. And I understand I'm out there with grown men. You know, a lot of times, Clay, too, for guys like Henry Ruggs III that are supremely talented and they've always been on that level, like whether it's high school, they were just different than everybody else out there. College, Henry Ruggs III was different than everybody else out there. And in the pros, it's not like that. It's rare that you have somebody that's just different than everybody else out there. So that's an awakening, too. That's a learning process. And a lot of times, young players, they know how to knock it down and get by that and assert themselves. But then there's others that need to have more time. And there's nothing wrong with that. But hopefully it's Henry Ruggs' time this year, because the Raiders could sure use a heavy dose of that assertiveness and that confidence of wanting to be the guy.
And on that, let's hear from Henry Ruggs talking about how he made himself stronger, putting on more muscle this year, and the reasons why he wants to continue to stay on the field. Here's two questions.
Part to get bigger, and if so, how has it changed?
It was my main focus. I mean, it's a man's game now, and you know, I'm not the biggest guy, but I have to, you know, get to where I can compete with grown men now. So that was one of my biggest, you know, biggest things that I hammered on was, you know, getting bigger, eating all the time, and just hammering down in the weight room. And I mean, from people saying, you know, I've looked noticeably bigger, so I guess it's paying off.
Sometimes there's a fine line between that, because you're a speed guy, you don't want to lose the speed. Mm. Do you feel like you've actually gained speed, gained explosiveness as a result?
Even in the weight room, you work on different things, but you know, when you're gaining weight, you still have to do the little guy things that I'm known for. So, you know, still hammered on those things and just got better in the things that I need to work on.
All right, one more question on this, because he goes on to how he wants to stay on the field better and longer, and this was a part of his game that we may not have saw last year.
It was mostly personal, you know, and sometimes, you know, if I'm blocking, I'm just, like, getting in the way. And sometimes, you know, I was moved out the way, and, I mean, I didn't like that personally, so I don't want to be a guy that's just threw around or just trying to be in the way.
I love that. And that just shows you, like, he wants to be a better blocker, too. But he's like, I didn't like getting pushed around last year. I took that personally. And that's just a motivation inside a guy that wants to get better at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows he belongs in this league. And when you start taking stuff like that personally after 1 year, I love his reaction to that, is to improve and to get better. And as you said, Mike Holmgren told you one time, fix it. He's fixing it. He's looking to fix it.
Mentally, it sounds like he's worked on it for sure. I think, you know, it's funny, it's fascinating, you know, being thrown around or whatever. I think he's been told repeatedly how light he is, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And again, college is college, right? Now, this is the National Football League, grown ass man across from you, with bad intentions. So, mentally, you got to get there, though, Clay. You can't be timid, right? You can't go out there and have a timid mindset. You have to have the mindset that I'm going to knock that fool out. Now, keep your head out, do it legally.
Mm-hmm.
But the intention's got to be there.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So
that starts first.
Yeah, yeah. And that type of aggressiveness, man, it's that fine line in football that every position deals with. Like, I don't want to cross that line, but I want to come close to crossing that line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to go to his way. I'm about to, you know what I'm saying? So it's you're starting to feel that a little bit. That's starting to ooze off of Henry Ruggs III a little bit.
I only wanted to play that because I don't think this sounds like a guy who wants to be a decoy or
hell no.
Or wants to any other role other than, you know, being that go-to wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Being the guy.
Being the guy.
Yeah.
And you wondered what his mindset was. I think we got a good taste of that now.
Right.
I'm okay with it. I'm very confident.
Hey, man, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that Henry Ruggs is going to take care of Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, yeah. His ability, the hardest part for him was the mental aspect of this game. His ability stands out. It's just, when is he going to get there mentally? And whether it was because of an offseason or not. Again, some guys are faster than others. Justin Jefferson was faster than others. I mean, watch Ja'Marr Chase this year. We'll see where he's at.
Yeah.
Right? Or watch any rookie receiver that came out in the draft this year. It's just, where are you mentally? Because physically you have all the tools, you have all the skills. That's why you were drafted in the first round. It's not about that. Yeah, you can beef up, you can get stronger. Okay, get that. But mentally, are you there with that assertiveness and that confidence level? And it sounds like he's there now.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and move the chains. Brought to you by Nova Home Loans. Hey, real quick on the text line, 69187. We're talking about the wide receiver group, and is this probably the most diverse and dynamic wide receiver group Gruden's ever had? Perhaps even since 2001, when he had two Hall of Famers, Tim Brown and Jerry Rice. From the text line, 69187, it says, in 2001, Gruden didn't have speed anywhere at receiver. It was very methodical and run-heavy. He has more speed now than he's ever had as a head coach. It's possible.
Well, it's bigger, stronger, faster athletes now than 2001. That's why it's hard to compare.
That's, I mean, you know, the game's changed, you're right.
Yeah, you got a 6'6 tight end that runs a 4'4. I mean, that's why it's hard to compare. But also, you look at the league, and it's a three-wide receiver league now. It's a spread offense league now. It's an air raid or West Coast spread league, accentuating the middle of the field, too. And you're going to implement the running game, and you have to have the running game for sure. But speed is definitely an element that is needed and necessary. I mean, we can't compare eras, but, you know, take Cliff Branch. He could play today.
Yeah.
The way he ran. And so,
yes, he did. Yep.
You know, there's certain different players in different eras or decades and stuff like that that can still play. And but it's hard to compare. That's when you ask the question. It's like, it's hard to compare, though. I mean, there's those two guys were Hall of Famers. But these guys today are different type of athletes.
It's not the same at all. It's almost impossible to compare, especially the way the game and design has changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, here's another one. 69187, the Salmon Ash text line says, if Ruggs was on any other team, he probably would have had double the targets. No offseason went just fine for Judy, Lamb, Jefferson, Pittman, Claypool. So
there's a lot of them out there. I mentioned just Justin Jefferson just off the top, but there's a lot of rookie receivers that didn't have training camp last year that still put up numbers. I mean, I hate the excuses. I do. Mm-hmm. And giving Henry Ruggs the excuse, oh, you had an offseason, now you feel better. I'm like, well, he was just slower to learn or slower to get it than others, right? And that's okay. If it's this year, that's okay. We'll take it this year. We'll take we'll take that level of production this year as the Raiders march to the playoffs.
Thanks again, Tom, from the Eastern Seaboard. Here's another one. Kelce had 145 targets. Hill, 135. Hardman, 62. Robinson, 59. Watkins, 55 from the Chiefs. This is just lip service from Derek Carr. Brian Edwards played in 12 games and only had one red zone target, and that was in week 17. No excuse. That's from Tom as well.
Yeah, I think the comfort, Derek Carr talked about that, in working with these young guys. I mean, trust is that important word that you have to have in any organization. It's no different on the field. I gotta trust these guys in a game. Look, man, I got Khalil Mack coming off the edge. I got Von Miller coming off the edge twice. I got Bosa coming off the edge twice.
Twice.
Yeah. I mean, I got Myles Garrett coming off the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got Clowney. I got all these guys this year coming off. I got to have trust that those guys are going to be where they need to be, or I'm going to get knocked out. So, again, as a player, put yourself in that guy's shoes. And that's what I did as a receiver. Repeatedly, I put myself in Elway's shoes. I put myself in Warren Moon's shoes. I'm like, okay. And when those guys aren't happy, I got to change that. I got to fix that. I got to make them happy. Like, I could catch a ball from Warren Moon, and then he could rip me because I wasn't where I was supposed to be at the time I was supposed to be there. I'm like, wait, we just got a first down. What are you talking about? I need you there sooner.
Yes.
And then it plays out later on in the game because that's what the quarterbacks are processing. They're processing so much that in the fourth quarter, they understand if a defender is squatting on you. They understand if a defense is cheating because now they got them set up.
They got them set up because you got them reacting to
right,
you.
Right. So don't try to do things that you're not supposed to do because that's going to mess everything up.
You know, also real quick on the text line, 69187 says, quote, knock that fool out. Definitely a new Pritchism. I tell you what, we got to get a shirt going out here. And I would love to see that on the shirts, man. Knock that fool out.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say certain things on the air, right? I mean, got to clean it up a little bit. But,
I think it drives it home now.
Yeah, I think people get it, though.
That's the attitude I want to hear. Of course, Mike is on with VSiN, Betting Across America, Monday through Friday. He's also, for nearly two decades, been noted as a premium college football analyst. I got to ask you, since the SEC unanimously voted to invite Texas and Oklahoma into the fray, and It seems like this surprised a lot of people. I don't know how you can keep a secret this long.
No, it's not. It's not
Texas A&M was surprised. Well, and Big 12 seems to be surprised.
I think they're
too.
Acting surprised.
Oh, really? Okay.
So to pull back the curtain of the Big 12, Texas has ran the Big 12. They used to have the headquarters up in Kansas City. Now they moved it down to Texas. A lot of people that wasn't happy with that.
Yep, you knew that move. It was going to be Texas-centric.
Yeah, I'll pull back the curtain even further. My school left the Big 12 to go to the Pac-12 because they saw this coming.
Hello.
They saw this coming. Mm-hmm. So Colorado's in a good spot going to the Pac-12 a long time ago.
Yes, they were.
Nebraska saw it coming. Mm. They went to the Big 10.
Good call, yeah.
These other schools, because they were the Big 12, even though they had 10 teams, even though they invited teams in, West Virginia and stuff like that, right? But yet they're still going with the Big 12. How stupid was that? But everybody knew that Texas had that control over that conference. And so Texas just packaged a deal with OU, and now they're going to be in the SEC, probably sooner than later. Because I cannot see them going through this until 2025, knowing that the SEC has already invited them to the conference, and now their regents and people in control over there, they've accepted that invitation. So, all they got to do is accept the invitation too, and then pay money to lawyers to find out how quickly they can get to the SEC now.
Yeah, what's the reality of the move? Could they do this in 2 years' time? Maybe go through the motions this year and then get it? Because it's really just about money being paid back, right? If there's fines or whatever.
Yeah, there's going to be lawsuits and stuff like that. I mean, they got bylaws, conference bylaws. They got to go through all that. So now it's going to be on the lawyers. The lawyers are going to have to settle this out. There's going to be some kind of settlement in which those two teams or those two schools go to the SEC sooner than 2025.
See, if I was there in Texas and OU, I'd be like, fine, let's go to court. Because I have a feeling the Big 12 will dissolve by the time we get this thing adjudicated.
The Big 12 is now the Big 8, which was the conference I played in.
Was it called the Big 8?
It was the Big 8. Yes, it was the Big 8. But back then, the Big 8 was Nebraska, OU, and Colorado. And then Kansas, Missouri, and, you know, Iowa State, Kansas State, you know, those Oklahoma State.
It was really four teams. You know,
really
the
three teams.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was
three or four. Yeah.
I mean, it was so dangerous when Colorado or Nebraska or Texas was on your schedule. It was like, or you in some years, you just knew you were going to get pummeled. It was like, you know, Big Ten teams would try to schedule that, and then they had to stop doing that when they would get 45-3 humiliating home losses.
Yeah, really, the Big Eight was the SEC back in the day.
It was.
If you win the Big Eight, you're playing for a national championship. Period.
What do you think is the next move for the Big 12?
The Big 8?
The Big 4. What did they do? Because is it smart enough for them to start bringing in like a Boise State or other teams? Or are other teams like Boise State, they're seeing the, hey, you know what? I don't think I want to go because this conference is dwindling.
Let me ask you this. What's the brand that sells the Big 12 right now? Kansas basketball?
It is. Right. Yeah, there isn't one.
There isn't a brand that sells the Big 12.
Nope.
I mean, so will they dissolve? Probably. Unless they can strengthen the brand somehow and make it a brand. Right now, the Big 12, they don't have a brand. What's the identity of the Big 12? It was OU in Texas, to be honest with you. But Baylor?
I mean, really, there's Missouri. That doesn't move the needle at all. You know, fine programs, fine universities, but it's not enough. They've always played second and third fiddle. Mm-hmm. TCU, I mean, does that push you any further? No. So the Pac-12 seems to be like sitting and waiting for universities and schools to make a decision. And
well, the Pac-12 has a brand, though.
And I mean, the Pac-12 could be that next super conference.
Well, you got I mean, they could. Look, BYU's independent, right?
Yeah.
Notre Dame's independent, yep. Stuff like that. But in terms of the Pac-12, they have a brand, conference of championships. I mean, basketball, football, whatever. But you got SC, you got UCLA, you got Washington, you got Arizona State. I mean, you got a brand. Now, is it SEC brand? Not to that level recently, certainly not. But it's a brand, whereas the Big 12, they don't have a brand. Not anymore.
Even if they tried to add certain teams, it's never going to be enough. Not, it won't replace the hole that was left by Texas and OU. It's an impossibility. But things are changing now. As you said, the NCAA got exposed in 2020, and now people are just moving on regardless of what they think.
That thing used to be the Wizard of Oz. The NCAA used to be the Wizard of Oz until Toto pulled that curtain back and exposed the wizard. Now NCAA, I mean, what do they have left? You're going to have football with their own entity. Yeah, they make money off of basketball, and that's their bread and butter right there. But even basketball, they're taking a hit there because you got the one and done. You got Jalen Green going to the G League and then getting drafted in the top five. So, I mean, if you're a one and done player, are you going to go to college?
I mean, all that's really left for you is the tournament, and that's the only thing college basketball has right now because the regular season seems superfluous until then.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you can go to the G League for a year, get paid and then still get drafted in the top five. I mean, I don't know one and done players or if they're going to go to a university for 1 year.
That dude getting drafted number two out of the G League, that says it all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the pathway to glory.
Hey, man. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with the NCAA, but this image and likeness thing, name, image, and likeness, I mean, that is interesting, but yeah, the Toto pulled back the curtain on the wizard,
and the wizard's not a wizard anymore.
Not anymore.
No, he's that snake oil salesman in that covered wagon sitting outside. Yeah. All right, for Pritch, I'm Clay. We thank you for listening. Coming up next will be Rich Eisen. I'll come back with some tweets of the day here on Raider Nation Radio on your Metal Friday. Let's go. Here on Raider Nation Radio, thank you for listening to us here on Pritch and Clay. I want to end the show with a thought from Derek Carr. He talked about you know, being a chance to be a Raider currently, but being able to watch Tom Flores and Charles Woodson go into the Hall of Fame next week, and just a beautiful sentiment what he said about Tom Flores as being such a huge fan of those he's looked up to and for those he has played with.
So I just thought, one, congratulations to both of them, you know. That's so cool, you know, like just as a fan of theirs, you know. Growing up, I was a huge fan of Seawood, huge fan of Mr. Flores because of where I grew up, you know. And getting to know both of them has been an honor to me, you know, because I'm just a fan, you know, really. You know, I think we all are at some point. You're a fan of somebody and you get to meet them. It's pretty cool. And Seawood, I can't limit his leadership to just when I played with him. He still is a leader to me. He still texts me. He still called me. You know, he'll call me out and tell me, what are you doing? Do this, you know, and he'll still tell me when I'm doing a great job. You know, and I think the demand he's always put on my life as a quarterback and as a leader of the organization, you know, I think that he knew on his way out that, you know, Khalil and I were coming up as the leaders for the organization. And, you know, just what he's always asked of us and demanded of us, he still does. I saw him at the at that Tahoe golf tournament, and you know, I hear his hey, hey, that Hall of Fame voice, you know, and I turn around and sure enough it was him.
Derek Carr on Charles Woodson and Tom Flores. I thought that was beautiful, especially thinking about Tom growing up in the Central Valley of California. Thank you so much for listening today. All of it will be on our podcast page at lvsportsnetwork.com, and RNR 920 AM will tweet out after the show. For Mike Pritchard, I'm Clay Baker. We thank you for listening. Rich Eisen is next.